What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump held dueling rallies on Thursday in North Carolina. Clinton's biggest booster, President Obama, campaigned for her in another must-win state, Florida. At a rally in Jacksonville, Obama noted that the polls are close and said the outcome cannot be taken for granted.
I'm not on the ballot this time, but fairness is on the ballot. Decency is on the ballot. Justice is on the ballot. All the progress we've made is on the ballot. Immigration reform is on the ballot. A higher minimum wage is on the ballot. Equal pay for equal work is on the ballot. Democracy's on the ballot.
Trump also was in Jacksonville Thursday, predicting that if Clinton wins, she would be impeached over her emails.
Here we go again with Clinton. You remember the impeachment and the problems. She is likely to be under investigation for many, many years. Also likely to conclude in a criminal trial. This is not what we need in this country, folks.
Two new major national polls Thursday showed Clinton edging ahead of Trump among likely voters. An Iowa man jailed Thursday in the killings of two police officers had been found by a judge to hit and financially exploit his mother and was ordered to move out of her basement hours before the shootings. Scott Michael Green, who was arrested Thursday afternoon, was secured with the handcuffs that had belonged to the officers he'd killed. He was charged with two counts of first-degree murder and could face life in prison without parole. Scott Michael Green remains in jail. This is VOA. A high court decision in London has thrown a roadblock in the way of England's decision to pull out of the European Union. VOA's Luis Ramirez has the story from the British capital.
A blow for Britain's plan to leave the European Union. Britain's Supreme Court ruled Thursday that the government of Prime Minister Theresa May cannot start the process of breaking up with the EU without involving Parliament. May had planned to invoke Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty and trigger the negotiations to end Britain's EU membership by the end of March, but that timetable is now uncertain. The reaction from No. 10 Downing Street, an appeal in December, and May thinks she may still kick off the process, which will take 2 years, in March. Her spokesman said May will not let the ruling derail the decision made by British voters in June. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, London.
The International Organization for Migration reports that at least 240 migrants, most from West Africa, have died or disappeared in two shipwrecks off the coast of Libya. IOM says 29 survivors, including women, children, and several babies, were brought to Lampedusa, Italy, by the Italian Coast Guard. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration says most of the migrants already had died by the time rescuers arrived. IOM spokesman Itai Viriri tells VOA about 12 bodies have been fished out of the sea and more are likely to be recovered as the rescue effort continues.
The fact that we are already talking of over 4,200 dead, when the whole of last year we're talking of 3,700, is of huge concern.
Variri says smugglers are apparently persuading the migrants to make the treacherous journey by telling them now might be their last chance to leave North Africa. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
Ecstatic Chicago Cubs fans are expected to amass downtown on Friday for a parade and rally to honor the new World Series champions. The celebration of the Chicago Cubs' first title in 108 years will kick off when team buses leave Wrigley Field at 10 a.m. for an official launch of the parade. The baseball championship is such a big deal there that classes at Chicago public schools were already scheduled to be off. Stocks retreated for an eighth consecutive day on Thursday as nervous investors remain transfixed on the potential outcome of next week's U.S. presidential election, which has become too close to call. The stock market is now on its longest losing streak since the depths of the 2008 financial crisis. With 5 days left until the election, Hillary Clinton maintains a lead in national polling. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, November 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya accuses the UN of bending to pressure over South Sudan.
The investigation we have come to conclude is shameful, unfair, and an exercise in scapegoating.
Macharia Kamau is Kenya's ambassador to the United Nations. A group of Kenyan lawmakers say they will not allow South Sudan politicians living in Kenya to destabilize South Sudan. Critics of DRC President Joseph Kabila want an investigation into links between Mr. Kabila's family-run bank and the Electoral Commission. And Amnesty International accuses Italian police of abusing migrants.
They have very often suffered abuses, including torture, rape, and prolonged detention. When they arrive in Italy, refugees and migrants are requested to explain what are the reasons, but actually in that moment, very often they are still too traumatized.
That's Matteo Di Bellis of Amnesty International. South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party warns its members against corruption. We'll examine what defines President Barack Obama's legacy in Africa, and drug-resistant tuberculosis is high in West Africa. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya's ambassador to the United Nations said Thursday that the Kenyan general who was in charge of UN peacekeepers in South Sudan during a violent episode in July has been made a scapegoat for systemic UN peacekeeping failures. Viewers Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations.
Ambassador Macharia Kamau told reporters that an internal UN investigation into events during the July 8 to 11 fighting, which led to some 300 deaths, was conducted with a preordained outcome in mind.
The investigation we have come to conclude is shameful, unfair, and an exercise in scapegoating.
He said there is plenty of blame to go around from headquarters all the way down to the field commanders. He added that it was difficult to believe that the Kenyan general, who had only arrived to the mission 3 weeks before, should be the only person to bear responsibility for failures to protect civilians. An independent investigation team appointed by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon blamed a lack of leadership on the part of key senior mission personnel for the peacekeepers' chaotic and ineffective performance. A UN spokesperson refuted the Kenyan accusation that the report's outcome was predetermined, saying the general was dismissed for leadership and command decisions taken on that day. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
A group of Kenyan lawmakers visiting South Sudan say they will not allow South Sudan politicians living in Kenya to destabilize South Sudan and promote violence to affect the implementation of the 2015 peace agreement. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
The Kenyan lawmakers talked to First Vice President Thabane Ndegai and their South Sudanese counterparts about the progress they made on implementing the peace deal. Asman Kamama, chairperson of the Security Committee in Kenya's parliament, led the Kenyan delegation. He says Kenya is a friend to South Sudan and that the government of Kenya wants to see a very vibrant, prosperous South Sudan. Kamama told the reporters at Juba International Airport that Kenya's leaders will do everything in their power to stop South Sudanese opposition politicians from using Kenya territory to destabilize South Sudan.
We will discourage anybody trying to use any of our countries as a launching pad for war. So we are very categorical. We did not target a specific person, but any leader from this region who is bent on trying to excite and encourage people to go to war, our countries must never be used as launching pads.
He says Kenya will also engage other East African leaders and urge them to stop South Sudanese opposition figures from practicing what he calls violent politics.
We are prepared as parliament to take this matter forward by way of coming up with a motion and even a bill that will address matters of this nature.
Kamama says the Kenyan lawmakers who visited Juba will be the ambassadors to ensure South Sudanese issues are addressed in a bipartisan manner. Kenya announced it will pull its peacekeepers out of South Sudan a day after the UN Secretary General fired Lieutenant General Johnson Mogai Kimani Odieki, the Kenyan Army's force commander. Kenya also said it will discontinue plans to contribute troops to a regional protection force to be sent to South Sudan and will disengage from the peace process, a statement that contradicts a commitment expressed by this group of lawmakers to continue trying to restore peace in South Sudan. Kamama is urging South Sudanese not to listen to those who incite violence.
What I'll only urge people of South Sudan, that they should not listen to anybody inciting them or trying to encourage them to take up arms or fight among each other. I think this country has high potential, and that if you maintain this peace, this country will prosper and even be one of the best countries in terms of development in this part of the region.
The office of the leader of the SPLM-IO confirmed that the spokesman of Riek Machar was arrested in Kenya Wednesday and deported to South Sudan by the Kenyan government. Machar's office said James Gadet was deported to South Sudan today. Kenyan authorities did not give any reason for deporting Machar's spokesman in Kenya to South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
New allegations about ties between the Democratic Republic of Congo's Electoral Commission and a bank linked to President Joseph Kabila's family have sparked calls for an investigation. As William Klaus reports from Kinshasa, the allegations come amid heightened tensions about delayed elections.
A Belgian newspaper published a report last week saying that the Congolese Electoral Commission had paid at least $2.4 million in fees to a bank with links to DRC President Joseph Kabila. The paper also said that the commission had withdrawn $7.5 million in cash from the bank, BGFI, for reasons that are unclear. The claims relate to a $25 million credit facility the bank extended to the Electoral Commission, which is known as the CENI. DRC elections were supposed to be held this month, but have been postponed till at least April 2018. The government has claimed that CENI's lack of financial resources is one of the main reasons behind the delay. The president of the Congolese Association for Access to Justice, George Kapiamba, spoke to VOA.
C'est encore plus grave en ce qui concerne les moyens.
He said that the revelations are even more serious because they concern the resources put at the disposal of the CENI, and because the Electoral Commission pretended it was unable to organize elections in the constitutional timeframe on the grounds that it did not have the money. Kapiamba has written to Congo's Attorney General asking him to investigate, but he does not expect his request to be acted upon. Based upon our previous experience, Kapiamba said, we are not convinced that the Attorney General can do it with the independence that we would like. Kapiamba claims that those with resources or who belong to the ruling political family can obtain protection, whatever the gravity or degree of the acts they commit. The government of Belgium has also called for a full investigation. Both CENI and BGFI have denied any wrongdoing. According to the bank, the fees are in no way unusual for a line of credit of this size, while the CENI's president has claimed that the cash withdrawals were made to pay salaries, rent vehicles, and buy fuel in remote parts of the country which are unserved by banks. The disclosures have attracted extra attention because an adoptive brother of Kabila is BGFI's CEO, and one of the president's sisters was listed as the owner of 40% of the bank as of October 2014. The allegations, the sources of which is documents handed to the media by a former BGFI employee, also target Albert Yuma, president of Gécamines, the state mining company and a close ally of Kabila. The Belgian newspaper article says that in 2013, the central bank deposited $43 million in a BGFI account held by a food processing company chaired by Yuma that was never repaid. The same bank reportedly extended a loan of $30 million to Gécamines in September 2015 and deducted interest payments worth several million dollars on two separate occasions. Yuma and the bank have denied any wrongdoing. They say that the accusation about the central bank diverting public funds to Yuma's company is false and without foundation, and that the second interest payment was taken from Gécamines due to a mistake, which was rectified. Kapiamba told VOA that he is unconvinced by the explanations, but unfortunately the Congolese justice system does not allow the population to confirm or quash the allegations. William Klaus for VOA News, Kinshasa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 4th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send a shout-out to listeners on all of our affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. South Africa's ruling African National Congress, ANC, party has warned its members to avoid corruption and abuse of state power. The party was reacting to a report from the nation's anti-corruption chief that suggested President Jacob Zuma allowed a powerful family to choose cabinet ministers. As Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, the main opposition party is now pushing for a motion of no confidence against President Zuma.
In a statement Thursday, the ANC said it welcomes what is known as the State Capture Report. The party said the report gives it a basis to discuss the allegations of corruption, but fell short of saying that action will be taken against President Zuma and others who are implicated. In the report, former public protector Tuluma Donsela details accounts of a number of current and former government officials who were approached by the wealthy Gupta family to either take cabinet posts or make decisions that favor their business interests. The party has threatened to closely examine the lifestyles of its officials to expose those who amass wealth through corrupt means. Meanwhile, some party veterans have reacted angrily to Zuma's conduct as alleged in the report. Cheryl Carolus is one of them.
Our country is burning and the African National Congress is missing in action. We are appalled that the blatant looting of public assets is being openly facilitated by those close to us and those whom we see as our leaders.
Opposition parties that went to court to stop Zuma from blocking the release of the report say they are considering various actions against the president. The main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, DA, says it will press criminal charges against Zuma and others implicated in the report. Mabine Seyabe, the spokesperson for the DA leader Musi Maimane, says the party will also ask parliament to act.
We've set a motion of no confidence, and hopefully we'll get this motion of no confidence will be debated. And all those ANC members that have made noise about President Jacob Zuma's dishonorable conduct will hopefully vote with that motion of no confidence.
Judith February, an analyst on governance issues at the Institute of Security Studies in South Africa, says that under the circumstances, Zuma should voluntarily step down.
We see a picture which is, you know, not constitutional. It's undermining of the rule of law, and it is where the state which is going rogue with the president who's going rogue.
Tuesday's report called for the creation of an inquiry board that will investigate all the allegations and reveal its findings within 180 days. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
With his second term coming to an end in January, U.S. President Barack Obama is preparing to leave the White House. He is the son of an African. His father was Kenyan, and many in Africa have considered Obama one of their own. So, after 8 years in office, what would his legacy be on the continent? VOA's Jill Craig has the story from Nairobi.
Hopes were high in Africa when President Barack Obama took office. Perhaps too high, suggests Kenyan political commentator Barak Muluka.
And if we in Africa were looking up to him to come with a magic wand to solve our problems, then I think our expectations were misplaced. He was not the president of Africa. He has been the president of the United States of America, elected by American citizens, and his foreign policy will be governed first and foremost by American interests.
As president, Obama made 4 trips to sub-Saharan Africa, visiting 6 countries. He has challenged African governments on issues like human rights. He set the tone during his first visit in 2009 to Ghana when he said Africa doesn't need strong men, it needs strong institutions. A highlight of his Africa foreign policy has been his emphasis on trade, not just aid.
I think President Obama built a framework for the U.S. corporate sector to get engaged with Africa,
by consistently engaging through the business councils and so forth, it sort of de-risked Africa and a lot of U.S. corporate minds. And I think that was an important achievement that the president made.
Obama also made a point of addressing African youth, a group he focused on throughout his time in office. Here he is in Kenya in 2015.
And when it comes to the people of Kenya, particularly the youth, I believe there is no limit to what you can achieve.
And Obama's message of hope to Africa and its young people may be what defines his legacy here.
He's shown Africa a higher path, and I think he's done this generally, that's been his politics, that he's always lifted people's heads up and says, look where you can go.
Obama launched the Young African Leaders Initiative in 2010 to help promising young people across the continent prepare for leadership positions. More than 250,000 people have joined the YALI network so far, and in 2016, 1,000 fellows attended leadership programs at U.S. colleges and universities.
More committed than I am.
Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Amnesty International has accused Italian police of abusing migrants arriving on its shores from North Africa, including beatings and electric shocks. Amnesty accuses the European Union's so-called hotspot system of pressuring Italy into abusing the migrants. Henry Richwell reports.
Under Europe's hotspot system, all migrants are meant to be fingerprinted and processed in frontline countries like Italy, allowing for a quick assessment of their asylum claims. But in many cases, migrants refuse because they want to claim asylum in other European countries, which is currently against EU law. 24 out of 170 migrants interviewed by Amnesty said they had been abused after refusing to give their fingerprints.
Ill treatment included beatings, but also the use of electricity, the discharge of electricity by means of stun weapons, and also threats of violence, beatings, or also permanent prolonged detention.
Italian authorities try to separate genuine refugees escaping war or persecution from so-called economic migrants. But Amnesty says they take little account of the trauma many migrants have suffered on the journey.
They have very often suffered abuses, including torture, rape, and prolonged detention. When they arrive in Italy, refugees and migrants are requested to explain what are the reasons. But actually, in that moment, very often they are still too traumatized and they have not had access to sufficient information about their rights.
Failed asylum seekers can be forcibly repatriated,
including to countries whose governments are responsible for appalling atrocities. This is the case of Sudan, for example, with which the Italian government has subscribed a memorandum of understanding in August this year.
The EU insists it aims to uphold the highest standards of human rights when processing migrants. The head of its border agency, Frontex, said this week the bloc aims to expedite the returns of failed asylum seekers.
The agency uses readmission agreements negotiated by the Commission at EU level. So as soon as we have an EU readmission agreement, we can, based on that, organize operations.
October marked a record monthly high for migrant arrivals in Italy, with over 27,000 people reaching its shores. Over 200 people have drowned in the past fortnight alone. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Researchers have found that the number of multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis cases, or MDR-TB, in West Africa is much higher than previously thought. Public health officials are calling for greater surveillance and control measures before MDR-TB becomes a major public health threat, VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis, or MDR-TB, has developed a resistance to two of the most common drugs used to fight the disease. The World Health Organization classifies MDR-TB cases as either new when the disease shows up in people who've never had TB, and retreatment cases, people who've been treated for TB in the past. In West Africa, the WHO estimates that 2% of all new TB cases are multi-drug resistant, and retreatment cases are reportedly much higher, an estimated 17%. But researchers on the ground in 8 West African countries are warning that the number of new and retreatment cases is actually much higher. They say the number of new cases of drug-resistant TB is closer to 6%, while as many as 35% of retreatment cases are MDR-TB. The network, West African Network of Excellence for TB, AIDS, and Malaria, called WANETOM for short, did an analysis of almost 974 sputum samples taken from people infected with TB. What they found was that 39% of the TB samples showed resistance to at least one first-line antibiotic used to treat tuberculosis, while another 22% of the samples did not respond to two or more anti-TB drugs. The findings are published in the online journal BMC Medicine. WANETOM's Martin Antonio, with the Medical Research Council Unit in Gambia, says the statistics are particularly worrying for the 245 million people who live in West Africa, one of the poorest corners of the world.
And the higher rate in the community, the more likely that it will be spread. And we really need to cap that.
Another problem, when the researchers took a closer look at MDR-TB cases, they found that a lot of the MDR-TB was also becoming resistant to second-line drugs. Health officials call this form of TB pre-extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis. This more dangerous form of TB was found in sputum samples at all study sites in Burkina Faso, Gambia, Ghana, Guinea-Bissau, Mali, Nigeria, Senegal, and Togo. Pre-extensively drug-resistant bacteria are on the verge of developing into extensively drug-resistant bacteria, which respond neither to first- or second-line drugs. The highest proportion of pre-extensive drug resistance was seen in Ghana in 35% of MDR samples. Antonio says if the spread of multidrug-resistant TB continues at its current pace, little could be done for some patients.
It means that the treatment options for those patients is also quite limited. So it means more of the patients may actually die from TB because they may be untreatable.
Antonio is calling for aggressive community-wide TB containment efforts to be put in place as soon as possible in West Africa to prevent a worsening of the tuberculosis epidemic. That includes beefing up laboratories to conduct rapid testing and treatment of TB, more personnel to make sure patients take their drugs properly, and actively following those who are treated more than one time for TB to lessen the risk of spreading multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Kenya's UN ambassador said Thursday that the Kenyan general who was in charge of peacekeepers in South Sudan during a violent episode in July has been made a scapegoat for systemic UN peacekeeping failures. Ambassador Macharia Kamau told reporters that an internal UN investigation into events during July 8 to 11 was conducted with a preordained outcome in mind. An independent investigation team appointed by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon blamed a lack of leadership on the part of key senior mission personnel. And that's it for this Friday, November 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Mark Ferguson, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good weekend.
On Tuesday, November 8th, all eyes will be on America as voters choose the next U.S. president. Tune in to our live comprehensive coverage with our correspondents around the country and around the world. Starting Tuesday at 2200 hours UTC GMT and continuing through Wednesday morning right here on VOA.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. Some things change, some remain the same. From the north to the south and the east to the west, We play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.